podcast for pirates. You are listening to Absolute Empowerment with Coach Jeff Connors on the Sports Objective. Join Coach C, a USA Strength and Conditioning Hall of Famer, every Monday night to see in a variety of guests, including former players, former and current coaches, pastors, and others will discuss relevant issues in coaching today's athlete, with the goal of equipping the athlete and those coaching them with the physical, mental, and spiritual armor necessary to live their best life. Here's Coach Connors.
Welcome to Absolute Empowerment. Tonight we have as our guest highly successful, well-known North Carolina and South Carolina high school football coach and power lifter, Coach Donnie Kiefer. Coach, so glad to have you in the house.
Man, thanks, Jeff. I appreciate the invite. I'm really looking forward to it.
All right, we're going to recognize our sponsor and then move on. We have Ed Watkins Marine, who has two locations to serve you, as they are located in Denver and Cornelius, North Carolina, in the greater Charlotte area of our state. He has fishing boats, pleasure boats, pontoon boats, center consoles, family-friendly bow riders, trailers, engines, and UTVs. He has all the brands you are seeking: Sea Pro, Suncatcher, pontoons, tritoons, Stingray, Yamaha, Suzuki, Mercury, Vexus bass boats, Explore skiffs, and more. Whether you're looking for a new boat or to repower your existing boat, Ed Watkins can help you with your boating needs. Visit them online at edwatkinsmarine.com. We appreciate Big Ed's support of the show, and it was a real pleasure coaching Big Ed Watkins. Thank you. All right, Coach. We want to talk a little bit about how we met first, which was okay. A little bit crazy.
Right.
But back in the 90s, I don't remember the exact year, early to mid-90s, both of us decided to enter a powerlifting competition, which I was pulling myself out of powerlifting retirement because I was over 40. So I entered the Masters, and somehow I got the idea to go to Currituck, North Carolina, and enter an AAU meet.
Yep.
And it was pretty interesting because I ended up winning the Masters, but then also the regular.
Yeah, the open. Yeah.
Category, the open category. Thank you. And so we were standing around after, and of course, you won your weight class and set some records, and we got to talking. And I was very surprised because, I think I had to pull maybe 540 to win, which was, you know, maybe 80-100 pounds under my best, but I think 1400 and something won 198. But what was shocking to me is they wanted me to do a urine test, and because I had been in a lot bigger meets and not have to do a urine test, so right. I thought that was pretty crazy. But it was, you know, it was a good experience. I had my little boy with me at the time, and you know, gave him the trophies to carry around, all that kind of good stuff. But you and I got to talking, and here I come to find out not only were you a very successful powerlifter, but also a head high school football coach.
Right.
And little did I know how successful of a coach you were. So, let's talk a little bit about that powerlifting meet first. Give me your perspective there.
Yeah, that was a lot of fun. I remember that. And I remember you had one of your former players with you, Washington, wasn't it?
Yeah, Mark Washington.
Mark Washington, yeah. And I guess he was helping you out at the meet. And like you said, that was the first time we had ever met. And I really went to that meet to, you know, try to break some records. I think I ended up breaking all four records that day, squat, bench, deadlift, and total in the 148s. So it was a lot of fun. And, you know, I remember one thing you told me, like, hey, I saw this guy running around like his hair was on fire. You were talking about me before we had a chance to talk. But yeah, I get pretty intense and all that. I know you do too. But, you know, it was a good time. And there was a period of time in my life where I did, I competed for a long time from the time I first got out of college. all the way up until probably, I think my last meet might have been 2014 or 16 or something like that. But I did it a long time. I was the North Carolina chairman for the USAPL, which started out as ADFPA, American Drug Free Powerlifting Association. And we transitioned in the middle of that. So, but there was a time when I would do, I mean, unheard of, but I would do 3, 4, 5 meets a year. You know, most guys were doing about one maybe. And then I got into a phase where I wanted to see if I could get cut. I wanted to try bodybuilding. So I'd been successful in the powerlifting world and all that, and decided I was going to try bodybuilding for a little bit, and actually did well there, and won some big competitions, won the East Coast championships. I won that. That was my first ever meet. Had no idea what I was getting into, but I was actually, and I know how much you know about strength, obviously you are the master, but I would actually train for a powerlifting meet and a bodybuilding show at the same time. And, you know, that was difficult and it was kind of unheard of, but, you know, I don't regret it. I thought it was a lot of fun. And all those years in powerlifting were just, you know, so much fun, and just really gave me a good background, because being a strength coach, I mean, I'm the kind of person, I'm a researcher. I know you are, because I've been around you. You know, it caused me to have to do a lot of research on fast twitch muscle fiber development and, you know, force application and just everything, you know, periodization and, you know, how to cycle and all that kind of stuff. So it really made me a lot better strength coach by competing myself. And the other end of that, I think, is that it, you know, it gave me an opportunity to give my kids an outlet, because I used to take them to meets all the time, too. And it gave me an outlet, rather than just going to them and say, hey, you know, we got to get stronger, we got to get faster, we got to get more explosive. You know, I was able to take them to these meets, which allowed them, number one, to be in a competitive environment, but number two, to set short-term goals. Right. You know, and you know, because, I mean, you were a great powerlifter yourself, but I've had coaches in the past say, yeah, well, we're not trying to train powerlifters. I'm like, yeah, neither are we. We're trying to train explosive athletes, but you know as well as I do, any really good power lifter is a very explosive, fast twitch person. You know, the days of the big, overweight, fat, not very strong, not very explosive guys, that's way behind us. And, you know, all really good power lifters are tremendous athletes.
Yeah, and it brings a few things to mind. You know, I got in, I think, 3 meets a year for a while when I was competing, you know, regularly, I guess you could say.
Right.
The other part of that is, I think there's something to be said when you know what it feels like to have 600 pounds on your back and squat it when you know, I weighed 181 squatting over 6.
Right.
And I mean, I was clean, and so were you. And so we, you know, I know both of us really worked hard, but I don't know. I get a little bit annoyed sometimes with some strength coaches that never really, you know, talk about things that are dangerous, but at the same time, never went through a progression of 2 or 3 years where you could put 600 pounds on your back and feel comfortable with it. And amen. I'm not saying you got to squat 600 pounds to be a great football player.
Right.
If I got a guy that weighs, you know, 330 or 340, I might expect him to squat 600 pounds, you know,
sure,
or 650 or whatever. But, yeah, you know, I mean, I don't think there's ever something particularly with linemen where you can be too strong. Now, I could say maybe something a little bit different for skill guys at times.
Right.
You know, when we're talking about speed development. In any event, you know, we can kick around a lot of ideas there and talk about some things that we learned over the years, for sure. Tell me, I'd like for you to go ahead into a little bit about what I learned about you that day as well, what a strong Christian you were and are. And how you, that was a big part of your coaching, a big part of your preparation as a powerlifter. Can you talk about that a little?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, you know, it's weird because when I was growing up, my parents didn't go to church. But they made sure that me and my brother were in church every Sunday. They would take us and drop us off. Then they would go to my grandfather's house and hang out with him and then come back and pick us up. So they gave us that opportunity to have a foundation, even though they were not saved. They were people who were extremely moral, very good people, didn't drink and use profanity, none of that kind of stuff. They were just upright, but they didn't know Christ. They did not know the Lord. They had no relationship, had never been saved or anything. But, you know, I still credit my mom to this day that she made sure we were in church. Now, the strange thing is you would think, okay, if she wasn't active in church, wasn't going to church, wasn't saved herself, why did she feel it was so important for us, for me and my brother? So, you know, I don't know why, but you know, I'm just thankful that that happened. But yeah, I mean, to this day, everything in my life, is all about the Lord and taking it to him in prayer, making right decisions, always seeking his guidance, knowing that he is in control of all things in our lives. I know some people, they can't fathom that. And a lot of people want to be their own God. They want to be their own Christ and think that they're in control, but they're really not. And Jeff, you know, everything that we do in this life, and I don't care what it is. I don't care really if it's athletics. I don't care if it's your marriage. I don't care if it's raising your kids. I don't care if it's your job, whatever it is, in the business world, whatever. Every single day, we are going to be faced with a true, real spiritual warfare. Everything that happens in our lives is a spiritual warfare. Just like we have the Spirit of Christ in us as Christians, there's also a spirit out there that is satanic, that is against us, that is the enemy. And it's so easy for all of us to be upset or offended or mad at or whatever people in the flesh. But what we have to realize is it's not that person, it's the spirit that is within them. And when you have the Holy Spirit in you and someone else has a different spirit in them, those spirits are going to clash. And there's going to be issues and there's going to be problems and everything's not going to go well. But, you know, as a Christian myself, I've always, you know, going back to powerlifting, I was always clean. Like you said, I remember when I broke the state record of 615, which is still the record at 165. I mean, everybody was like, there's no way this dude can be clean. There's no way. He's lying. And, you know, being the state chairman for all those years, I tested myself in every meet. Had myself tested so nobody could ever say that. But what I used to do, and I know this sounds extreme, but I don't care because this is how I believe. I used to pray that God would give me the same results as the guys that were juicing without having to do anything but trust him and train correctly. I prayed that he would give me wisdom, that he would show me how to not to overtrain, how to eat correctly, how to cycle, how to do everything right, and give me the same results to be able to beat those guys that were juicing without having to do it. And he did it for many years. And, you know, I just give him the credit for all of it.
Well, I had maybe the same prayer, but mine was like, just let me get in the top three. So, yeah, I won my share, but, you know, I also felt good about placing in those meets where I knew where everybody was juiced to the max, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, they would be happy to tell you what they were on and the whole nine yards. So I mean,
And I even had guys at some gyms offer me stuff. Like they would be like for free. They'd be like, oh man, if you're putting up that kind of total, you know, clean, if you do this, we can add 300-400 pounds to your total. You'll be, you know, world champion. I'm like, yeah, but it won't be me. You know, it won't be me doing it. And the other thing is I was always a little bit of a coward to do that kind of stuff. I didn't want to put a bunch of chemicals in my body. Because I'd heard too many, I don't know, war stories of how people got cancer and, you know, just all kinds of different stuff from putting, you know, not just steroids, but other things in their body. And I wanted no part of that.
Yeah. Yeah, I just wanted to, if I saw my name in Powerlifting USA, I was really happy. I didn't care, you know. What.
That's true.
So let's talk a little bit about your coaching career, and we can talk a whole lot about your coaching career because you have a whole list of successes and championships and accolades, and of course you coach my son as well. in high school, which I, you know, I appreciate very much. And, you know, Bo right now is a paramedic and doing extremely well. And I'm very proud of him and what he's doing. We got a little grandbaby and so forth. So, but really appreciate your influence on my son. But let's talk a little bit about the high schools where you coached and what you accomplished and a little bit about your road to success.
Yeah, it's been I've been a traveler for sure. I mean, I've coached at a lot of different schools, and I don't know, just my niche in high school football, I think I coached at Davidson College before I became a head coach. So I had like five years or so as a high school assistant, and then decided, you know, I want to be a head coach. So if I want to be a head coach, what do I need to do? And, you know, I thought about getting on the college level as a long-term type of thing, which, by the way, I really appreciate you allowing me to work with you in the strength program at East Carolina. That was a really great part of my life. I learned a lot from you, being one of the best in the country, without a doubt, best in the profession. But, you know, I'm just grateful for that time I got to spend in the East Carolina strength program with you, learning that. But anyway, so I didn't know if I really wanted to go to college route or what I wanted to do, but I ended up writing a letter to the new head coach at Davidson College, which at that year it was Vic Gatto, and he was a legend. He played at Harvard, and he was a legend, extremely intelligent guy, obviously. A very successful football coach. But I wrote him a letter when he got the job, and I told him who I was, gave him a little bit about my background as a coach and as a lifter. And so what I did in the letter was try to convince him why he needed a full-time strength coach, why he needed a football strength coach, and told him that with my background, I could be not just a strength coach, but also a position coach. And long story short, I ended up getting the job and coached running backs and was the football strength coach, and had a, you know, recruiting area and full-time recruiting area and all that kind of stuff. So, I mean, that was really a good thing for me. So after that, that's when I first became a head coach. And that was at St. Paul's High School in St. Paul's, North Carolina. I was only there 2 years. I think we went like 18-6 or something like that. Had some good runs in the playoffs, but anyway, you know, from there, I went to all over the state, from the mountains to the coast. Went to the mountains twice, Andrews and Tuscola, where I coached Bo, was at East Carteret, which was also a great place. They had been very unsuccessful, and we were able to turn that around. I think we went like 37-6 or something over a three-year period. You know, before that, I was at Roanoke High School and coached Tremaine Goddard, which you know very well. And, you know, Tremaine was a phenomenal player and person, and we're still very close. You know, we turned that program around kind of the same way. But that's kind of the way the whole thing went. I went from East Carteret to Tuscola up in the mountains in Waynesville, and they had been down a little bit. They had a tradition at one point, but they were down. And second year there, we went undefeated until the final game of the season, and then made a little bit of a playoff push. Then the third year there, we went, that was 2009, maybe. We went to the Western Championship, and one game away from the state championship. So, you know, I've been blessed. Went from there to my alma mater, turned that program back around. We won the most games in school history and scored the most points in school history. And, you know, that was good to do that for my old hometown. People used to give me a fit, all of my friends from back home. They'd say, you know, you go all over the state turning these programs around, and as bad as we are, why don't you come turn us around? So that was just one of those deals where, you know, I wasn't getting any younger. And I said, well, I mean, I really loved it at Tuscola. I really loved it at East Carteret. But I just said, well, I'll go give it a shot. Stayed there for 5 years, had a good record there, and turned the program around, got it going in the right direction. And then, you know, decided to move down to South Carolina and retire in North Carolina and go down there and double dip. You know, in North Carolina, you can't retire and then still work full time. So in South Carolina, you can do that. But retiring in North Carolina, enjoying my full retirement, and then going to South Carolina and being able to work full time and still coach and teach and do all that was sort of a no-brainer. So I went to Green C. Floyd's High School in Horry County, right near North Myrtle Beach and all that. And first year there, we made it to the second round of the playoffs. Then they have never really not ever won much of anything. I think the most wins in school history might have been 7 maybe or something like that. But we ended up winning 2 state championships in a row. We won it in 2018 and 2019. And then I went from there to West Ashley, where I am now. And this was my 4th season at West Ashley, trying to prepare for the fifth one now.
Gotcha. So how many state championships total?
Well, just 2, those 2, but I've been to the Eastern or Western finals in North Carolina 5 times. So
yeah, I knew you were up in there a lot.
Right. Right.
I wasn't sure how many.
Right. Right.
But I know you've had some personal accolades as well.
Yeah, I've been blessed, no doubt. I mean, you know, some Coach of the Year awards. And, right. You know, one of the most meaningful things, I think, was like when I came to South Carolina, my first year down here, I was voted as the Strength Coach of the Year in our classification. And then the second year again, and then also the Strength Coach of the Year for the entire state, 1A through 5A. And I'm just thinking, I'm not sure that would ever happen in North Carolina. I'm not sure anybody could ever come into the state and the first year there be named like, you know, the head strength, the top strength coach in the state like that. So, you know, they really did, you know, accept me. And I was also like, you know, Coach of the Year in 1A both of those years. So just, you know, I just appreciate the fact that the coaches in South Carolina kind of accepted me and welcomed me and, you know, all of that. I don't think that's that common.
Yeah, well, it's hard to deny success. And I think that they're pretty much, they had to be aware of your background, what you had accomplished, and also how your strength and conditioning program is exemplified on the field. So speak to that a little bit about your feelings about when you go into a program, what type of program you were bringing in the off season or the preseason. And you can even talk about in season, of course, but what do you think distinguished your programs over the years? And, you know, we're always talking about great strength coaches and, you know, this team won and that team won. And you know, you could have a good strength coach, a great strength coach, or maybe a not so great strength coach, but you still won football games. So that made the guy a great strength coach. But I really think that you've shown wherever you've gone, you basically spent the time to put in a great strength and conditioning program. And, you know, it's evident that it's transferred. So speak to that a little bit.
Right. I appreciate it, Jeff. And, you know, the big thing with me, you know, like with my background and, you know, I started lifting, I guess, when I was like 12 years old. And I had a real infatuation with strong people, being strong. All of that. I used to buy every muscle magazine you could buy. When I was in high school, I was writing to strength coaches and asking for programs. You know, there wasn't many back in those days. There were a few.
Yeah.
I remember LSU was one that sent me an entire manual, and somebody else, I can't remember, maybe it was Texas A&M or somebody like that. But I just had a real hunger for it and science for it and all that. And I feel like that a great strength program, when I go into a new football program, and like I said, almost everywhere I've ever gone, they've been down. But the common denominator has been that they weren't down because they didn't have any talent. They were down because they didn't emphasize being strong. They didn't have a competitive mindset. They didn't have a championship mentality. They didn't do the things that they could do based off of the talent level that they had at school. So the first thing I've always done when I go in is like, we hit the ground running. And usually when I go into a new school, it's usually somewhere around March or April or something like that. And we just reset the strength program, whatever it was that they were doing or whatever, we're going to go in, and unless it's what we're already doing, which that has never happened. I've never gone in somewhere that has my same mentality on it, I guess. But so the first thing we do is we go in and we start, you know, from scratch. Number one, making sure we're squatting below parallel. Number two, you know, making sure that our technique is perfect. Making sure that we're moving the bar fast. You know, Fred Hatfield's old compensatory acceleration and all of those kind of things. You know, we make sure that we teach them how to be intelligent lifters, and we want them to understand the why behind what they're doing. And we want to challenge them. We want them to challenge themselves. Too often, you brought up earlier, you know, I mean, like a big thing nowadays is, hey, what's strong enough? How strong is strong enough? I understand that concept. I mean, everybody doesn't need to be 500 and 600 pound squatters and that kind of thing. But, you know, one thing that you never hear anybody say, hey, what's fast enough?
Yeah.
You know, if 4.4 is fast enough, why not 4.2? Why not 4.1? Why not 3.9? You never hear anybody back off on getting faster. You never hear anybody back off on jumping higher, becoming more explosive. But you will hear people back off on, you know, what's strong enough. Well, my thing is, like, I want to stay in a safe range for every player, but I don't want them to fear weight. If right. they're afraid of weight, and trust me, we do not train heavy very much of the year at all. I mean, you know, maybe one or two cycles throughout the entire year, we might get up to 90% for a double or something like that, or a single. But we don't train heavy. We train explosive, but we are intent on getting strong, because I think being strong does two things. Number one, well, more than two things, as you know, as your muscles get stronger, so do your ligaments and tendons and all your connective tissue. But also what it does is it gives you that confidence. It gives you that that mentality that the sky is the limit, that you can do anything that you set your mind to. It obviously is going to create hypertrophy. You know, most high school kids, you know, could stand to put on some weight, at least good muscle weight. So it does a lot of things. You know, obviously, like I said, we're talking about moving the bar fast all the time. And, you know, I remember back in the day working with you, we had the Tendo units and measuring yeah. bar speed and all that kind of stuff. And we don't have all of that apparatus. I know, you know, I know velocity-based training is a huge thing these days. We don't really have the, yeah. you know, the technology using it, but we emphasize it nonetheless. And so, I mean, that's the big thing. We just want to go in. There's something to be said for being able to go in and exact your will against another player. And, you know, as well as I do, having played the game like we both did all our lives, when you're up against somebody strong, you know you're up against somebody strong.
Yeah.
And it does something to you mentally. You've either got to raise your standard or you're going to get your butt kicked all night. And, you know, I just feel like that's just something that it takes. I think, you know, just everything that goes with being strong. And if you train the right way and you really, you know, let these guys see that they're making progress, that they're getting faster, they're getting stronger, they're doing all those things. And I think you have a real chance to be a winner, even if you haven't been.
No doubt. Well, I appreciate that. What about the Olympic lifts? You employ the Olympic lifts?
Yeah, we still do cleans. For a while we did snatches, you know, I mean, you yeah. know, cleans obviously, or all Olympic lifts obviously, are inherently fast twitch. You can't pull the bar slow, but yeah, we still incorporate those as well. And you know, we try to be well rounded. We do a lot of plyometrics, a lot of linear speed. We do a lot of change of direction. I still use your come to balance series, which you know, I've always thought was extremely helpful. I think that's probably the most undercoached aspect of any program, is learning how to decelerate and reaccelerate. You know, everyone teaches acceleration. Not everybody teaches deceleration, or being able to accelerate from different angles at different speeds.
Yeah, we started teaching coming to balance about 1989, and then over time, they gave it a fancy name, deceleration. So, right. This is something we had been doing for many, many years.
Right.
Yeah, you got to learn how to drop those hips down and get in a good position to go to a different direction, you know. And
right.
Yeah, this ain't rocket science. I mean, but, you know, it takes reps and it takes good body position. And it takes, you know, some, I guess you could say, amortization
right.
ability. So the other thing too that I would mention is the guys that I coached that went to the NFL and were successful, many of them power clean more than they bench press.
Wow. Yeah.
And a lot of people don't mention that or see that or work hard enough to realize that. You know, Bruce Carter from Havelock came in as a quarterback, probably power clean 240.
Yeah.
Left as a linebacker, with the Dallas Cowboys, he power cleaned 405. That wasn't a hang clean. That was coming from the floor.
That's wild.
Jason Brown, 419. Madison Hedgecock, 385. Robert Quinn, 405.
Wow.
I mean, I could go on. Greg Warren, who was a snapper for the Steelers, 353.
Yeah, he was my my kids, Charles, yeah. Sarah, Donnie. Charles was my oldest son. Greg Warren was actually Charles's roommate.
Yeah. Great. Yeah, Greg was awesome. And, of course, he had a great career with the Steelers.
Right.
And, yeah, Hakeem Nicks, receiver, 353, power clean. Yep. I mean.
He played for me in the Shrine Bowl.
Okay. Yeah.
Great, great kid.
Yeah, so, we've run across some. Yeah, these kids make a name for themselves,
Yeah, no doubt, no doubt. And
maybe
all those that you
mentioned. To a lot of people.
Yeah.
Can you go back a little bit to your story growing up? And can you think of anything, any challenges you personally had where you really felt like your faith was an integral part of you overcoming adversity?
Yeah, I mean, like I said, like when I was young, I wasn't really saved, but like one story that's always come back to my mind is like, first of all, my dad died when I was like 9 months old. So I never got to know him. He got killed in a car accident. My mom had met him at the beach. He was a Marine. He was stationed at Camp Lejeune. They met at the beach, ended up getting married. She moved to New York with him. He was from New York. He was actually a Golden Gloves boxing champion. So they got married up there, and then, had my brother and then me. And then when I was 9 months old, he was killed in a car accident. So my mom moved back to North Carolina. I'm from Concord, North Carolina. And she moved back. And, there was a few years there, obviously, having no father in the family. I was too young, I guess, to really realize it, because she got remarried when I was five. So we didn't really have a relationship with the Lord. Obviously, I wasn't, saved yet at that age or whatever. But I can remember me and a friend of mine when we were like in the fifth grade. And, of course, my mom had us in church all the time, like I mentioned earlier. But I can remember me and this friend just walking around the neighborhood like kids do and playing whatever sports in season and doing all that. And we just got into this really in-depth discussion about how God had to be real. And we could point out all the different things. So it was like God had his hand on me from a very early age, from a time before I even really knew. But he gave me and this friend of mine all this in-depth insight into what caused us to believe that God was real and that kind of thing. So I always grew up, definitely a believer, maybe not, having any theological background or anything like that, knowing what was going on. But I always felt like God was with me, always. And then when I was, around 16, 17 years old, I think I was a sophomore in high school, maybe a junior. One of my football teammates, Leonard Stogner, he took me to a revival, and I had never been to a revival before. It was more of a youth revival kind of deal. And so he took me to this revival in Concord, and that was the first time I ever remember meeting with someone who really told me what it meant to be saved and led me to confessing Christ. One of the youth pastors that was at this revival or whatever. So that's the first time I ever remember being saved. But I didn't really, walk it out. Obviously was not discipled. I think that's one of the biggest things that that happens in today's church and the modern church, and maybe forever, is that getting saved is awesome and it's necessary and it's the beginning, but being discipled is so very important. And I think that, you know, as a coach, I think we have to model that. You know, if we want our players to understand who Christ is, I think we need to model that. We need to be able to not be afraid to share Christ with them and all of those kind of things and really be that guy. But like I said, I didn't get any discipleship. I had nobody ever tell me how to walk it out, what it's supposed to look like. You know, what does it mean to be a Christian? How do I turn to the Lord? How do I get into the Word? How do I learn to pray and have a relationship with the Lord? I never had any of that. And so, you know, I went off to Lenore Ryan and, you know, had a great experience there. And Coach Jack Huss, who was the head coach there, not only that, but also a legend in his own time playing there at Lenore Ryan. But, you know, I'll always be appreciative to him for giving me that opportunity. But so went on to Lenore Ryan and became one of the biggest partiers in the school and on the team. I mean, we were all Teaks, Tau Kappa Epsilon, and all the football players were Teaks. I mean, that was kind of one of those unspoken things, you know, because all your teammates and players were in it and that kind of deal. But, you know, that did not take me down the right path. And I was just, you know, I was just another guy, you know, chasing girls and drinking beer and doing whatever, you know, getting my degree. And then, you know, later on when I had already graduated, I met my wife, Debbie. And, you know, she is a tremendous Bible teacher. She just kind of lived it out. And that's what made it so attractive. I mean, not only was she a beautiful girl, but she lived it out. She walked it. She didn't just talk about it. So that's when I really, really gave my life to the Lord and was able to turn it around and, you know, start doing things the right way. And, you know, she somewhat discipled me herself. You know, she was able to teach me how to be in the Word and how to live my life and what's expected and that kind of thing. So, you know, that's kind of my background coming through. Like I didn't really have that strong situation, but I do feel like God was with me. And one thing I was going to say earlier, like when I was 15 years old, we had a scrimmage and I was a sophomore in high school and we scrimmaged Kannapolis, A.L. Brown that night. And so one of the players, all of his parents were out of town. So all the guys went to his house. Everybody was going to crash and all that. And we weren't really drinking or none of that. We were just like staying up all night and all of that kind of crazy stuff. So me and this other teammate of mine, we woke up late, like, or early, I should say, early in the morning, like 1 or 2, and everybody was gone. And so in all of our wisdom and intelligence, we decided, okay, we're going to go look for them. So everybody used to hang out in Concord and ride around the streets and all that kind of stuff around all the McDonald's and Hardee's and all of that kind of stuff. So we decided we're going to go look for them, never found them. And on the way back, they lived out in the country. On the way back, we had a wreck and guy had a 1966 Immaculate Mustang and we flipped that thing 6 times, no seat belts on, nothing. And, you know, wow. People said that they heard me yelling for help like a mile away. And we were out in the middle of this field, out in the middle of the country, you know, with nobody else around. And the guy that was with me, I don't think he ever ended up being right. I think it affected him diversely, you know, or adversely, I should say, mentally. But there's no reason I should not have died in that accident. No reason whatsoever. Wow. I mean, so that was another instance where I knew that God had his hand on me. And, you know, I never really lost sight of that. When I look, it was more when I look back on it than it was in the moment, because it just kind of just showed me that, hey, God was with me. He protected me. He gave his angels charge over me, just like it says in Psalm 91, you know, and, you know, that was just one of those moments.
Right. Yeah, and of course, my hope is that some collegiate athletes will watch these podcasts and learn from them because, you know, I started the website armoredlife.org kind of as an oasis for the troubled athlete just because I saw so many guys go by the wayside, lose their scholarships
right.
for different reasons, but mostly was repeatedly smoking marijuana, as we all all know that that was a, that's been a major problem over the years.
Right.
And, you know, I just love to see more guys be able to make good decisions and not have to sacrifice an education or their football career because of a bad decision. But of course, now you got the portal and the NIL, which, you know, kind of, I mean, it could help you make even worse decisions, I guess, at times. But, you know, I'm glad that I retired before all that came about.
Right. And, you know, I mean, it's already ruining the college game, and it may at some point ruin the high school game. I know in North Carolina, the private school association has approved it, that the private schools can now give NIL deals and all that. And so, you know, to me, you know, even getting away from the NIL part for a moment, but back to the discipleship part with kids, like, that's why I feel so strongly that we as coaches, especially high school coaches, and trust me, I know that we're not to be out there proselytizing and preaching to the kids all the time and stuff like that, but I've always tried to make no bones about where my faith is and what I believe. And, yeah, you know, I feel like that, you know, and I've said this many times, when we stand before God, he really does not care anything about what we've accomplished on this earth. Anything that we've accomplished on this earth, if it was not for his glory, is just going to be burned up like stubble. The word tells us that. And so, I mean, I think we owe it to our kids, and we owe it to everyone that we're around, to teach them who Christ is. And, you know, just because we're in a public school setting, just because it's football, and, you know, a lot of people want to say, God don't care about a football game. God don't care about your lifts if you're a lifter, you know, and I disagree with that. I feel like God cares about every little thing that we do. I feel like Christ is in us. I feel like he wants us to be successful. I think he's going to teach us lessons through adversity. Not everything's going to be a piece of cake and good, but we can learn through sports and other activities that we can count on God, that we can trust God, that, you know, he can give us, you know, we don't sit around and pray for wins. Oh, Lord, give us this victory, you know, but we do pray about protect our players, you know, help us to perform at the best of our abilities. Help us to trust in you. And, you know, it's just, I feel like that's something that we owe to our kids. And if we don't, I've kind of always felt like this too, like if I get fired for mentioning Christ to my players, then I don't need to be there anyway. You know, yeah, then God's got something better for me. I mean, I care more about what he thinks than what any administrator or any politician or any organization thinks. I care more about what God thinks. I mean, you know, at the end of the day, when we stand before him, you know, I want to hear, well done, my good and faithful servant. You know, I don't want to be, hey, what did you do with those thousands of kids that I gave you an opportunity to speak into their lives? What did you do? You wasted that opportunity. And I don't think it had cost me my salvation, but I think that it would be very disappointing to the Lord, and maybe my reward, which, you know, reward enough is just being with him. We don't need any other rewards, but just, you know, salvation in Christ is reward enough. But I feel like it can affect my eternity if I don't do what God called me to do while I'm here.
Well, I really appreciate you sharing that. And, you know, I just, you know, I guess I want to tell you that, you know, you have been a mentor to me just through observation, because I have never seen you waver on that ever. And, you know, I really would applaud you for that.
I appreciate that.
Every kid that's ever played for you understands that. And I think that's very favorable. And through through Tremaine Goddard, for instance, who I had the opportunity to coach at, you know, UNC Chapel Hill, one of your products,
right.
You know, what a wonderful human being he is.
No doubt.
And are there any particular scriptures that, or stories in the Bible that you kind of hang your hat on with these kids?
Yeah. I mean, well, obviously, like, you know, through my playing years and lifting years, I mean, Philippians 4:13 was the obvious big one. I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. And I feel like that means spiritually as well as physically and everything in between, mentally, emotionally, in every way, that we can do all things through Christ who strengthens us in whatever area that we need it. But another one for me is Proverbs 3, verses 5 and 6, which basically says, lean not on trust in the Lord with all your heart, lean not on your own understanding, in all your ways acknowledge him, and he will make your path straight. And I'm going to say right now, without any doubt, that I know beyond any doubt that the reason that I have been successful as a coach, as a lifter, whatever other areas of my life, is not because of me by any means, because I fail miserably all the time. But it's because I have tried my best to be obedient to the Lord. There's been times in my life where he has directed me, I feel like, to go to another school to try to, you know, try to salvage another program, whatever. And I didn't really want to go. And, you know, I like was happy where I was and didn't really want to go. But what I came to find out was that most of the time it wasn't about football. It wasn't about going and just turning that football program around. Almost every time it was one or multiple kids who needed the word of God, who needed an example of Christ, who needed to hear about who is Christ, who needed to witness how you can be a strong, powerful man of God and still be a tremendous competitor, that did not make you weak, you know, that being, I mean, Jeff, you'd be amazed. I mean, when I left East Carteret, which was hard to do because we loved it down there, loved the kids, your son included, and, you know, Debbie loved it there, and we're going to the mountains, to a place we'd never been. I'd heard bad things about the program, how, you know, like the parents in the area, you know, like they were just so critical of the coaches and all that, but I felt like God was leading me there. So we ended up, you know, going there and had a lot of success there. But, you know, the one thing that I know that God took me there was that I'll never forget, like either my first or my second year there, I was telling the kids something about, you know, the Lord says this and the word says this. And then some of them were just like looking at me. And I was like, hey, when we get done here, if any of you guys kind of are confused what I'm talking about or don't know anything about the Lord, you know, and you'd like to just stick around. I had about 15 kids that stayed there in the locker room and told me that they had not been to church since they were little bitty kids, maybe Easter and Christmas. They didn't know what Christ had done. They didn't know the story of Christ, how he had died for our sins, how, you know, the punishment for our sins was death, but he took on that death and took on that sin. They knew none of that. And in modern day America, we're talking about, you know, in the, you know, early to mid to, you know, 2010s there, that there are people out there that don't know anything about Christ. They don't know what it's about. You know, they, you know, a lot of times, you know, some pastors out there these days, and the Bible told us it was going to happen, you know, that they will say whatever tickles the ears of the people who are listening. Some people won't be honest about, you know, about the word of God. They just make everything like, oh, it's just, you know, God's like Santa Claus or whatever. And, you know, but there's so many people that just really don't understand and really have not been exposed to that. And so I know that God took me there for that reason. And some of those kids ended up getting saved. And one of them I became very close to, and even his parents weren't believers, but then they did become believers, the whole family. So, you know, even if it's about one, so be it.
Yeah, I just always go back to four things, doctrine, reproof, correction, and instruction. And if you can incorporate that process in your program, I think you're going a long way. You know, and I think that's an inspiration. And of course, I always say, you know, I was always the correction guy, which was the way it went. But I tried to do it in as much of a loving way as possible, I guess you could say.
Right.
you know, I'm curious because I talked to Mickey Marotti. I did a podcast with Mickey. I've known Mickey for a long time. Obviously, you know, we go back when he was at Cincinnati. You know, Mickey's at Ohio State making a very good income, right, you know, as a strength coach. And I applaud him. Mickey grew up, you know, he did not have, you know, a father, you know, similar to you. But what I always think about is, you know, I don't know what the percentage was. I'm going to say 70% of the guys I coached at the collegiate level with football did not have a dad growing up.
Wow.
And I mean, that might even be a conservative number. I'm not sure. You know, and I'm not talking about, well, it's an African American issue, or no, it's not. It's an issue for everybody. You know, plenty of white kids, Hispanic kids, black kids, didn't matter. I mean, what I was wondering is, when you were able to mentor kids where you knew they did not have a father in the home, did you think that that gave you special insight, having experienced that, to be able to minister to them?
Yeah, I think so. Like I said, I did have a stepfather, but, you know, that's not quite the same. My mom got married, you know, remarried when I was 5 years old. But most of the time with me, the kids that I know don't have a father in the home, I try to be like extra sensitive to what their needs are, what they're going through. I try to like really see them in a different light, because they don't have that, you know, male figure trying to lead them in the right, teach them how to be a man. Most of them were raised by grandmothers, maybe an aunt, you know, sometimes an aunt and an uncle if they're lucky, that kind of thing. But I think, you know, maybe not so much from my own experience having gone through it, but just understanding what that means to them, understanding what it means to not have that male figure in your life and trying to show you the right way. And, you know, and many of these guys have a real affinity for female leadership. That a lot of them cannot deal with a woman telling them what to do, even though they don't have the father in the house. And, you know, sometimes you would think it would be the opposite, like they might resent men, but most of them don't, that I've come across. Most of them resent a female, whether it be a teacher, administrator, or whatever, trying to tell them what to do. And I don't know if that's a macho pride because of not having dad, they had to stand up and be the man of the house, or what it is. But I've noticed that a lot over the years.
Yeah, that's interesting. And, you know, of course, one of the issues now that seems to be growing is mental health.
Yep.
And, you know, I think we need more mental health professionals around to keep people on track. I'm not sure all the reasons for that.
Right.
But I know it's very important. And, of course, I've had some folks on podcasts now that are mental health experts. And some of their insights are very interesting right now as to where we're at in athletics and basically where we're at as a country.
Right.
So I think that's important as well. I wanted to ask you, in some of the more, let's say, the more memorable games you've had, maybe playoff games, maybe state championships, do you remember any teams that you didn't really think from a talent standpoint that they might be able to get it done, but somehow through human will, through character, through hard work, that they got it done and you were able to experience that. And what, you know, that was very satisfying. That would be very satisfying. Of course, can you remember any teams like that?
Yes, several, actually, one being East Carteret. You know, Roanoke was really bad when I got there and we got that turned around, and we actually ended up playing East Carteret and beat them really bad with, you know, subs in the game and all that. And, you know, it was a situation where when I watched them on film, I was like, you know, they got a couple of really good players, you know, like they got, you know, TJ Corman and a couple of these guys are really good players. But as a whole, these guys just don't have it. They just do not have it. And, so for some reason, I'm still not sure why, when the East Carteret job came open, I said, I'm going to check into that. And so went down there and checked into it and, you know, got the job. And, you know, when I went there and went in there and you know, got to see the kids, got to meet the kids. And, of course, I started talking right off the bat about, hey, you know, somebody's got to be 2A state champions. Why not us? You know, that kind of thing, trying to build their confidence and all that. But when I looked at them, like especially up front, like the strength program had not been good. And I don't mean to say anything bad about East Carteret people, because that they're really good people down there. They really are. But when I got there, their weight room was like a fitness center. They had like a pec deck and a, you know, a standalone incline. I think they might have one squat rack, you know, a couple of lat pull down machines and stuff like that. So, you know, the strength program that they had, coupled with the kind of kids I was seeing that were, you know, going to have to be the lineman and that kind of stuff, I was just thinking, wow, you know, what have I gotten myself into? But what I found out very quickly was that those were some tough kids that were willing to work extremely hard. They were willing to do whatever they had to do to get better. And, you know, like I said, I think we ended up going 37-6 or something like that. And I don't know if you remember Chris Price. Do you remember Chris Price? That
I do.
Played for us. So Chris is my defensive coordinator now.
Okay.
He went and played at Campbell. And then when he got out of college, he coached. And I tried to get him with me at a couple other schools through the years. But when I took the job at West Ashley, he ended up finally coming down with me down there. And he was one of those kids. I mean, I can remember he was like a strong safety or something like that. And that was not his skill set. He ended up being a really good linebacker, started at Campbell, played offensive guard for us. But those kids bought in and did everything that they had to do to become winners. And they had probably the best 3-year record in the school's history, I would imagine. And, you know, that continued on with people like Chris Berner, and, you know, with your own son, with Bo, you know, with a lot of kids that when you just said, you know, these are kind of average looking high school kids, but they were just warriors. They were just absolute warriors and got it done. They were willing to do whatever. You know, Billy Jackson's another one that comes to mind. And there's so many. I wouldn't do them justice trying to name any, because there were so many of them. Trey Fulcher, all of those guys. But that was one. Then the other one was Green C. Floyd's. When I went down there, they were really bad. They had not been good in a while. I think they did decent the year before or something like that. But over the years, they had not been good. But those kids, like, really, truly worked hard. If you looked at them on the hoof, you would think, you know, you're in trouble. We don't have those big linemen and that kind of stuff. But, man, I tell you, those kids got after it. They wanted to win. We had a quarterback named Bubba Elliott that was just an average little 5'8", 5'9", 155-pound guy that was phenomenal. Now, we did have a good tailback, that Jaquan Dixon, that ended up going to Georgia State. But that the guys that made the difference in that program were the unsung heroes, the guys that didn't get their names in the newspaper. So that's two examples of places that I thought, this isn't going to happen, but it did happen.
And it's great stuff, because, you know, you always remember those kids. And, you know, I had a little bit of inside information there, because I knew you guys were practicing about 3 hours a day in the middle of and it wasn't even day, it was night. And then we had mosquitoes on that field that looked like dragonflies. And then you had to, when you were running, you had to have quick feet, because you had to dodge those copperheads. So,
yeah.
Yeah, those are some tough kids, man.
There was. They were brutal. And I tell people to this day, like when we would pull up, you remember how the practice field was beyond the game field stadium? Yeah. Go down that little dirt road. When I would pull up back there in my truck, because I had to put all the equipment in the back of the truck and take it down there. When I would pull up in my truck, before I could even get out, it was just tick, 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 tick. The mosquitoes were hitting the windows. And that's legit. I mean, they were just all over us. And we ended up having to buy off out of the football budget, cases of off to have out there on the practice field. That's a fact.
Yeah, I'll never forget one of my most memorable experiences there was Bo. I think Bo was playing defensive end maybe, and he came down hard and smashed the kid. And of course, you know, my dad coached me, and my dad coached all his life. So he was in the stands. He was up there from Florida.
Right.
Coach Bo, and he jumped up and yelled, and his teeth flew out and went down through the bleachers into the weeds.
Oh, no.
After the game, we had to go down and find his teeth.
Oh, no. That's wild. Yeah, and your dad was a very, very successful coach, wasn't he?
Yeah, he's in several halls of fame. I can't, you know, and he was an all-time in football and baseball in the state of West Virginia, 50-year all-time team in both sports.
Right.
He's got a whole ton of accolades. So, yeah, we're going to wrap it up here soon. You know, we could, man, I could go for at least 2 hours on this stuff. And really, man, if I think we're talking about things that could help kids and, you know, help save a few kids and help kids to be more successful, I'm all about it. And that's really what this podcast is about.
Right.
But before we go, I'd like for you to just, you know, mention some things about your family, mention some things about Debbie. And I know she's always been part of the process and part of what you've done, and you've always included her.
Right. Yeah. I mean, that's been, you know, as well as I do with Michelle, that a great wife is imperative if you're going to be a successful coach. And, you know, Debbie Kiefer is just, she's the epitome of a coach's wife. I mean, she has done everything from film games to be the athletic trainer, to be the primary fundraiser, to taking care of the kids. She's led our FCA groups for the kids. She's, you know, just everything you can imagine, she has done it. And I'm going to be honest, there's been a lot of times if she wasn't helping me, I couldn't have gotten it done with a lot of the organizational things and administrative things and just the way that she's loved and cared for the kids forever and still does. I mean, she's still on the sideline every game. And, you know, I know that's unheard of, but my wife has been on the sidelines with me just about my entire career. If she wasn't, she was up top filming. So, you know, that's been a blessing to me. And, you know, people have questioned that before. And I actually had a pastor question me one time and said, "Hey, coach, I don't, you know, mean any disrespect, but why does your wife need to be on the sideline?" And I said, "Well, Pastor," I said, "Pastor, let me ask you this." I said, "Who held up Moses' arms?" I said, "She's my Aaron. She's holding my arms up." I said, we're praying constantly. So, you know, but, you know, I just kind of let him know that. Yeah. I kind of let him know that was really none of his business and that it wasn't going to change. And, you know, her being there is a big part of just who we are. But my oldest son, Charles, he is actually in France, went over there and planted a church. So he has six children, he and his wife. And Charles played for a year at North Carolina. He played for a year up there. Yeah. And then he went into the ministry. He was a campus pastor at can't remember the name of the church. Kings Park, right. Kings Park, right there in Durham, which is a big time church for college students. A lot of students from Duke, Carolina, North Carolina Central, NC State all go there. So, you know, he's always been involved with athletes. In fact, here's a good story. One of the years, I think it might have been 2005 when Carolina won one of the basketball national championships. Yeah. He led four or five of those guys to Christ. He was like their spiritual advisor, I guess you would say, or whatever, met with them on a regular basis, did Bible studies with them and all of that kind of stuff. And four or five of them got saved that year. So that was incredible. But my daughter, Sarah, she got her degree and master's in accounting from East Carolina. So her and her husband are both ECU people, graduates. And she lives in Cary. My youngest son, Donnie, is actually he's the regional manager for the entire Raleigh area and greater Raleigh area for Google Fiber, doing all that kind of stuff. He was an installer for a while. Then he became the regional manager. So they're all doing well. So we've got grandkids and people all over the place. So just enjoying life.
Well, congratulations. I haven't had really a chance to tell you how much I respect everything you've accomplished, but I see you on Facebook, of course, and you know, and I pick up a few things that you've done. So congratulations on everything. And I really think you should get some type of award for how you've influenced so many young people in relationship to building their character and teaching them how to be successful. And so, you know, that's what this podcast is about, to have people on like yourself. And we want to continue to influence the world any way we can. I'm right now presently in being certified as a health and life coach. So I want to add something to my certifications as a strength coach.
Right.
And I'm also adding a Christian component to that as well. So I'm excited about that. I did want to tell you before we go that Bo recently benched 350.
Yeah, you told me that the other day. That's awesome.
And so I guess he wants to try to be the strongest paramedic in the state. So we'll see.
Hey, that's a pretty strong bench, man. I'm telling you.
Yeah. Anyway, thanks so much for being on. We'll probably do it again sometime, and I'll be looking forward to speaking to you sometime in the near future.
All right.
And I wish you luck this year, this season. So I'm going to go ahead and sign off. This is Jeff Connor signing off for Absolute Empowerment. We'll see y'all next week, and God bless. Thanks so much, Donnie.
Thank you, Jeff.
You've been listening to Absolute Empowerment with Coach Jeff Connors on The Sports Objective. Join us every Monday night for a new edition of the show. Listen to the show pretty much everywhere podcasts are found. Be sure to follow us on social media at TheSportsOBJ on Twitter and TikTok, at TheSportsObjective on Instagram. Like and follow our Facebook page and subscribe to our YouTube channel. As always, we appreciate you listening to the show, and go Pirates!